Welcome to the Lost Library, Seeker. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Grayscale. I'm Matt, your host and GM. And we're doing kind of a special, different episode today. This is going to be the official episode 7. And if you heard our update episode on Monday, you know that this is kind of the end of the first, we're going to call it the first arc of Grayscale. And it's going to change things. So, with me today, we have four of our cast members playing their normal Grayscale characters, so no worries there. But this is just a narrative experience. We're not really going to be rolling any dice. If for whatever a dice roll is required, I can just do it because I have heaps of dice everywhere. But we probably won't need one unless we just really want to randomize something. This is all going to be a narrative thing. And I think it's important that we make that note really upfront because this is going to be weird. So let's go down the line and let's introduce ourselves.
Hi, my name is Alan Sells and I play Dame Mallory Montebang.
Hey, I'm Emmeline Morris and I play Friday Dunn.
Hi, I'm Joe Hadfield and I play Owen Bainbridge.
Hi, I'm Travis Thomas and I play Cole Cameron.
Normally we start these adventures by telling you about the weather in Port Avalon because I'm basically just an RPG meteorologist. Here's the problem with that though. Y'all aren't in Port Avalon. Y'all don't wake up. That's an important distinction because normally there's like that sluggish and it's like, oh, I'm a little disoriented. No, you just kind of, you weren't really aware of anything and then you were aware of things. The last thing y'all all remember is whatever y'all were doing on the morning of Halloween. So that's the last thing you remember. And then you don't remember anything. And now you're aware of standing in just kind of like a really nice entry hall to a house. There's some big double doors behind you. There's like a dark marble floor with some gold shot through it. There's some big marble columns. It just kind of stretches out, and at the far end, there's a big, beautiful, elaborate staircase. It's got a green and gold thick carpet running down the middle of it and everything. Chandeliers. Incongruously, up against one of the pillars off to one side is a real big dog bowl, like a plastic from PetSmart dog bowl. And that's just kind of where you are. All four of you are there. You're aware of each other. You're all there, dressed in more or less your default hero outfit.
I was about to ask. So Mallory sleeps with her fan on a bracelet. And, like, she keeps it under her pillow, but it's a fine silver chain. She has her fan, does she not? She would check for that first and then what she's wearing.
Well, you're in your, I guess, would you describe Mallory's hero outfit as her battle outfit, more or less?
Yeah, her black dress with the divided skirts.
Yeah, you're in that. So wherever your fan is normally held on that, that's where your fan is. And it is, notably, your bone fan.
Ah, shite.
Do you have any idea where we are?
I don't.
No. No idea.
Well, then, until otherwise proven. And she reaches into her corset and pulls out her fan and just snaps it open. I'm going to treat this as hostile territory.
Ooh, Matt, since we're in battle yet, do I have my sword?
You do have your shiny new sword.
Hell yeah.
It's a very good shiny new sword, isn't it?
It's very good. I'm a big fan.
That was a heartbreaking episode. One of my favorites.
So Owen will just kind of idly like clutch at the pommel of that and survey his surroundings.
While we're asking, like, what we have, does Friday have, like, her, like, bag that has the book in it and, like, the stone and everything?
Yes.
Okay, good. She'd probably be kind of distracted, like, trying to somehow contact Ben to, like, ask what's happening.
Oh, very good. Okay, so if you remember, the last time we saw Friday's stone, there was a new rune carved on it in a different color. You're trying to use Ben's side of it, and it's a real weird sensation. You're basically getting the telepathic spiritual version of, like, a bad channel on TV's static.
Oh, that's worrying.
And Cole, I mean, this is a foreign surrounding, but also not. He's used to being in lavish, overly decorated houses, so he's going to do what comes natural, and I think he's going to just try to go through drawers and whatnot because his parents hated that.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Against the wall that has the two big double doors, there are a couple of, like, end tables, and you're rifling through, and one of them just has some, like, crap, we're going to have to do a roll. Dang it. Okay.
I broke it. I already broke it.
Okay. Travis, real fast. High or low?
High.
High. Okay. Okay, cool. So your first one that you rifle through is, it's just got some, like, scraps of paper and, like, it's weirdly got a copy of, like, a Gideon's Bible that they leave in hotel rooms. A lot of pages are dog-eared. The other one, as you're digging through it, though, you find a small velvet bag, like, shoved down in the back in the corner.
All right. I think Cole, we're going to have to investigate. Yeah?
Cole, dear, what are you doing?
Stuff.
While I understand what you're doing, I think, maybe. I don't understand what you're doing. And I'm a bit concerned that, could you come back over here, please, with the rest of us?
Yeah, just one moment. Real quick. And I'm going to go ahead and look in this velvet bag. This is how I learn cosplay.
There are four small, hard objects in there. Does Cole have any idea what a pomegranate seed is?
Oh, of course.
I think he's aware of the concept of a pomegranate seed.
Okay.
I don't know that he's had any experience with it to, you know, just look at one and go, yep, that's a pomegranate seed.
Okay, so they're just four hard, smooth kind of teardrop. I'm just now realizing I don't actually have a good visual reference for a pomegranate seed.
Welcome ruby to Cole's red. Club. You're getting there.
Yeah, so there, it's a teardrop ruby red small hard object. There's four of them in this bag.
All right. Huh. And I guess I'll just shove it in my pocket. Yes. Attempting to be nonchalant. And and I will walk back over to Mallory, Owen, and Friday.
You know, it's fascinating, of all the things you've learned, the first thing you do when you walk in a house is loot the place. That's fantastic.
Loot?
Owen and Mallory are such good parents to this lost boy. Travis, I'm going to need you to write down somewhere on, like, a character notebook or something that you have those, because those are going to persist and probably cause trouble later, and I love it.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I'm in.
Okay, if you took something, you put it back right now.
I didn't loot. I liberated.
We don't know where we are. Here. We don't know where we are. We frequently deal with angels and demons. Do you really think that the best idea you could possibly have is to steal from a celestial being?
I am far from celestial, but gosh, does that give me the warm fuzzies to hear someone actually appreciate me.
As soon as the voice sounds, Mallory twirls and her skirts, like, flare out. But she stands in front of Cole and Friday, if possible, and she snaps her fan into a circle and creates a shield.
Mallory, No one noticed where this thing came from, but right in front of you, I mean, like, centimeters away from your nose, is the muzzle of a very big black dog. Coincidentally, there's also a muzzle centimeters away from Owen's nose, connected to the same dog. And there's a third one that's just kind of looking intently at all three of you.
Dog puppy.
You're real? How much is real?
Oh, everything's real here. I would have thought the three of you especially would have known this feeling.
Who are you? Why have you taken us? And do you intend to hurt these children? Because if the answer is yes, then you will answer to me.
A man in dark jeans, a gray button-down shirt, and a relaxed sport coat that's open. He's got, like, the sleeves of it rolled back a little bit. Steps out from behind the dog and, like, pats one of the heads and just says, oh, good boy, Cerberus. Go have food. Mallory Montbank.
Dame Mallory Montbank.
Oh, pardon me, m'lady. He does an elaborate, very sarcastic bow and just looks at you and just goes, the problem with that claim is that the world that would have given you any title is gone. Huh. Hello. For those of you who don't remember me, apparently, and I am just, he puts a hand over his heart and just goes, hurt. I am... Ooh, hold on. I get to actually do this. This might work again. And he just like gestures and black flames spring up in sconces along the columns.
And yeah, Hades. You're Hades. We all get it.
Yes, and some kind of a magician.
And he like sticks his arm straight up in the air and just goes, it worked! Oh, it worked. And he seems genuinely relieved. I can say it again.
Yeah, Fred, we know you're here in Scoob, but where is Shaggy, Velma, and Daphne?
Cole, I thought we had a breakthrough in the forest. Okay, listen, sports fans.
Mallory still has her shield up, by the way.
Good. Oh, great God is in front of you. Probably best to have defenses as jubilant as he currently seems. Oh, boy, I can say, okay. I probably won't be able to say it long. I'm going to say it a lot. Give me like 2 seconds. And he just turns away and just goes, Hades. Yes. All right. Great. I haven't been able to say that in centuries. You have no idea. Ugh. Okay. Cliff notes. Earth is gone.
Gone.
Come again?
Excuse me?
Earth?
Huh?
Yeah. Gone.
When you say gone,
like, did you lose
stolen?
It?
I'm going to elbow Owen and, like, look over him like, I am sober, right?
I don't think either of us are, or none of us are sober.
Hades is just looking at y'all and just goes, this isn't a Doctor Who episode. I didn't lose a planet. He stops and he puzzles for a minute. He's like, just like... Okay.
Are you going to finish a sentence? Doctor Who?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I mean...
Hey, cosplay, who's on first?
Oh, don't you start with me.
Oh,
I mean, if this is the end of the world, I'm going to have fun with it. We're already toast.
I'm assuming that we're already dead, which is why I'm a little bit more glib.
Sort of. Not quite. It's, okay. There's, okay, come this way. It's gonna be great. I have snacks, I have food, I have drink, I have...
Do not eat.
This isn't fairyland. Holy crap, I can say that too. This isn't, oh, yes. God, I'm gonna miss it if y'all reassert it. Okay,
And Mallory does drop her voice, which probably the god can still hear, but...
Oh, yeah.
Do not eat or do not drink of anything that they offer you. It could be a trap.
I'm not Percy Jackson. I get it.
Cole's going to pat around in the vest he's got on and he's going to find a pack of cigarettes, and he just flips it open and kind of points it towards Owen.
Owen would take one and then look at you dead in the eyes and goes, "Just remember your training when you do this." And he will light it. The conventional.
Actually, that's a good question. So wait, the world is gone, right? That's what you said?
Uh-huh.
I wonder.
He just stops and looks at you like he just like holds his hands right under his chin and just goes, "Yes."
I'm going to also take a cigarette, and I'm not going to use it, but I'm going to reach for the spooky weirdness that was Hellfire and all that good stuff. And what do I feel when I reach? Is it still there?
The core essence of Cole with his power, the power that was kind of like restrained and tapped into a little by that demon, that's all still there, along with some traces of Hellfire. But your little stowaway isn't answering the phone either.
Cole's eyes go wide.
Do we have a sign of good faith that you will not attempt to harm us in any way?
I mean, functionally, in all intents and purposes, you're already dead, so... Tell you what. If at any point this becomes wearisome or concerning for you, all you have to do is say, with full sincerity, "I am done." And turn around, and wherever you are, no matter where in the house we go, there will be a door directly behind you that will take you right out into the Elysian Fields. I don't offer this deal to everyone, but listen, you four are part of a small group that earned it.
So we get to go all end of Gladiator if we just choose to call it quits right now, huh?
If you choose to abandon the world, yes, you can go to a reward.
You're offering the Fields of Heaven.
If that's your particular belief system, sure, it will be a very close approximation to what a Victorian believes heaven would look like.
I was about to say, you seem to know a lot about me. You don't have to patronize me. You know I'm Anglican.
Well, yes. It's just... whatever happened, the gates of heaven and hell are still shut to us for some reason.
She closes her fan and then places it gently on her lips and taps very slowly.
Alan, what does that mean?
I don't trust you.
Okay. Hades is just going to look at you when you do that and just goes, "I kind of wish you had been in the little adventure the three of them went on with my Reapers, but I fully understand why you don't trust me, Lady Montbank." And he's going to turn, and he's going to walk, gesturing over his shoulder to you, towards another door that just opens in front of him.
As he does that, I'm going to give a look at everybody in there, and I'm going to whisper under my breath, Yeah, I just said that.
Friday, like, understands, but she can't, like, relate. Like, she does relate, but she can't out loud. So she's like... so she, like, definitely looks scared and, like, she understands what that means, but, like, as she doesn't...
I feel
really
like it's, like, a reassuring, like, "I don't know how to deal with this situation," smile and nod. Like, good, buddy.
Yes, exactly.
Mallory comes up to Friday and squeezes her shoulder and gives a smile that is... understanding, but also sad.
"Me too. Let's go together. Yeah?"
Friday nods and kind of mirrors that sad smile, and ready to go.
Owen is just kind of like, so once Cole makes that admission, Owen is just looking for I guess Cole's initial reaction to that?
He doesn't know how to process that? He's just kind of... This is very off-kilter. Oddly enough, the thing that is forever plaguing you, once it's gone, it's one of those things like you almost miss it. Mm-hmm. Like this was a part of me that I had to deal and accept, and now it's just gone, and like it didn't feel like a struggle. It was just like a...
Yeah. Owen just like puts a hand on your shoulder and goes, hey, not that had to happen was the world ended. So I guess that's a win.
I guess we got to miss the Fury Road stuff, so that's good.
Yeah, positives. Owen doing his traditional compartmentalizing of everything.
As we start to follow Death, I like the idea that like Mallory's left hand is on Friday's shoulder, Owen's right hand is on Cole's shoulder, and Mallory reaches out her right hand and takes Owen's left. Mm-hmm. And the grip is hard and fearful, but she's letting none of that come through to Friday, but all of it is going to her clutching Owen.
It's inappropriate, but as everyone is marching forward like that, I really want the soundtrack to be The Boys Are Back in Town. Just because it feels so weird.
I mean, it's not quite yet time for the triumphant musical number, Cole.
Yeah.
Patience.
So y'all step through the doorway that Hades had gone in front of you, and you step into what, for all intents and purposes, is a very big, very fancy movie theater. There's not the traditional movie seats. It's more of those modern ones that are like easy chairs that have recliner functions and everything.
Hell yeah.
Oh, and this place looks like it's where you took me to see the Star Wars.
Yeah, it's, you know, a theater.
You gotta drop the...
It's kind of endearing, though.
I get it, but like, look, if you're going to be my undead afterlife mom, I'm going to need you to be a little more chill.
And I'm going to need you to accept me just the way I am, because I am not going to change. And she boops you on the nose with her fan.
We got eternity for this. Let's roll.
So there are 6 chairs in the middle of the theater. If any of your characters are actually like familiar with movie theater design, they're in the perfect spot.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
They're in the perfect spot. There are 4 chairs. There's Hades, and there's an empty chair. And somehow, because magic, presumably, Cerberus is sitting at Hades' feet, chewing on what any of y'all that are anatomy enthusiasts would know is a human femur. Don't think too deeply about that. And just kind of
Mallory's eyes go wide.
He's just kind of enjoying himself. It's fine. Land of the Dead. Probably bones everywhere. Don't think about it too much. So, where are y'all sit? How are y'all sitting first?
God, I want to be right next to Hades. With a seat open for Mallory, obviously.
All right, so we got empty seat, Hades, Owen. Is Mallory taking that invitation?
Yes. But she's opening and shutting her fan in seemingly a distracted way, but looking at Hades as she does so. When she sits herself down, though, it is the picture of a proper lady. Perfect posture, ankles crossed, like she is about to hold court.
And Owen does what I do when I sit down in movie chairs and slouches all the fucking way down.
And her fan is resting across her lap.
Is Owen one of those who would immediately like super recline this chair all the way out?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Or you just slouch? Okay.
It's like slouch, then start like doing the recline.
Nice.
Also, since apparently Hades can understand the language of fans, I was saying you are cruel to him.
Hades just shrugs at you.
It's like, yeah, that's part of my gig.
I have a tough job. I just do it, man. What do you want from me? Cole and Friday, where are y'all sitting?
I feel like Friday would probably want to sit next to Mallory.
Okay. Which seat is Cole going to take? Which end seat is Cole going to take?
Cole is in the front seat.
Yeah, you know, Cole doesn't really care. He's just kind of along for the ride and regretting that Mallory doesn't want him to eat anything because, I mean, popcorn and movies, it's a thing. So he will sit there, slouched down, kind of like Owen, except he's got his feet propped up on the seats in front of him. And he's got his arms crossed because he's kind of pissed because he wants some snacks. No snacks.
So did he sit down next to Friday or did he sit down next to Hades?
You know, I think we got the Hades front covered. I'll sit down next to Friday.
Okay. So as soon as all four of y'all sit down, y'all all kind of notice this same thing. In this room, there had only been the six chairs. As soon as you sat down, though, like, Owen, your chair just kind of, like, molded itself into the perfect slouching chair for you. It almost became more like a beanbag in consistency, almost. You're, like, nestled into it. Mallory...
This is so comfortable and wrecking your spine at the same time.
Mallory, yours became almost like a proper high-backed, almost like a throne in everything except ornamentation. Friday is... just like the most comfortable movie chair you've ever been in. And Cole, as you're slouching down, another movie chair appeared in front of you for you to put your feet on just out of nowhere. It just like, boop. It was just there. Hades just goes, all right, we all seem comfortably sitting. It's good. Y'all aren't going to have any snacks because I don't know. You still don't trust me, but that's fine. Let's get on with this.
You've got to know about every single story about, you know, Greek mythos that exists, and you might know why some of us are a bit apprehensive.
You do know that in the actual original stories, I stayed out of all of my brother's petty shit and really just did my job, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, like I'm very aware. Oh, that's another question. Is Dionysus here? Because I gotta thank him for a lot of shit.
He just, like, looks at you, reaches into his pocket, pulls out a cell phone, types out something. Like, if you're just kind of glancing over, you see, like, three dots pop up. And then a big, just, like, it's in all caps. It goes, like, a couple lines deep. It just says, Owen!
Yes.
And it's... it's somehow he's managed to, like, get it magically color-coded on the iOS messenger system. And this one is, like, a deep purple color.
It just kind of looks at that. Huh.
Like, hey, are you getting wine, Owen? Is that what we're doing here? We're dead. I mean, live it up, right? Also, second side point, Hades, my boy.
Yes.
When are we going to get some of that good, good Hercules soundtrack sung by you? Come on, let's go.
He just like turns and looks at you and narrows his eyes at you. And for a second, a split second, Cole, all his hair is blue fire. And then it's back to normal.
It's very good.
Mallory is muttering under her breath, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think we're in heaven.
How devout was Mallory in her life?
Devout enough for a proper lady, but very questioning.
Okay.
She believed, but she asked lots of questions, which, of course, didn't bode well for a lot of people.
Yeah. And then thankfully you came to the 21st century where that's just kind of okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think previously, even when you had come forward in time, you were never aware of this. Like you had never, you had no reason to be aware of it because it had been with you literally your entire life. You notice now that it's gone. Like you're noticing the absence. Every time you had actively tried to touch the divine, like what Mallory perceived of as the Godhead, you had felt a warmth in you. It can be explained by just like Mallory has like a guardian angel that would just be like, hey, you got this, buddy. Or God himself was noticing that prayer. Whatever it was, Mallory had felt a warmth. This time as she's praying, it doesn't come.
That just makes her continue to pray. And probably, let's see, Owen and Friday would notice this. I'm not sure if Cole does. Tears start silently rolling down her cheeks as she continues to pray.
Okay.
Owen's.
Her eyes are fierce and like.
Oh, come like on now.
Piercing.
Are you saying that Owen, Mallory, and Cole have not bonded in the time since?
No, I'm saying that you are
two chairs away.
It's
two chairs away and slouching, because her body language is still very strong and poised and confident, but her
okay, yeah, that's fair.
Rolling, but her eyes are hard as they stare into Hades.
Owen just like pulls himself a bit more up in his seat and like takes her hand.
As you do, like, the chair shifts and molds so that it's still super comfy under you. Hades is just kind of looking, just kind of shakes his head a little bit and just goes, listen, kids, his voice is deeper. It's less jovial now than it was a minute ago. Like, whatever seriousness the situation has reasserted itself in his mind. And he's just like, okay, kids. Yeah, it sucks right now. Y'all have to see some stuff, and it's probably not going to be great. But y'all have to see it to make your decisions. So we're going to get through this. I wish I could tell you more than that. Let's just sit back and enjoy a little bit of a movie for now. And he claps his hands, and the screen lights up. There is there's a view, like it's space. Stars, everything. Kind of off to the left in the upper left corner, you can see like the traditional Renaissance view of heaven, right? So like the clouds and the wall and the big pearly gates and light shining. And you can also see industrial steel chains wrapped around the middle part of the gate with a big old padlock on it. And in the bottom right-hand corner, you can see what looks almost like a cavernous space with all red lit. With a more like almost like a evil Uruk-hai or orc style wall with a nasty gate in it. Anyone who can read Latin can just vaguely make out an inscription over the gate that says abandon hope all ye who enter here. Very much like if a movie producer was gonna make these settings. And the camera zooms in and just keeps zooming in and you see Earth pop up with the moon and it's rotating and orbiting around and you keep zooming in and you go to the west coast of the US and down, 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 and you get to Port Avalon and you get to the Southern Lighthouse. Not the northern one where Owen almost died, the southern one, the other one on the other end of the bay. And you zoom in and as you're zooming in closer, it pops up and it says Port Avalon, October 31st. 11:05 p.m. And standing in like an open field just a little ways away from the lighthouse are four people. And y'all recognize, through some degree or another, you recognize all four of them. Standing with his back to the lighthouse is Milo, looking all perfectly dressed as normal in his priest suit. He's got his sunglasses on. Standing in front of him, facing him, are three women. And y'all recognize them as Shandy, November, and Sunny Mustabee.
And what's going on in the scene? Is it just like a still scene, or do we have action or movement or Sound, what's going on?
It seems like they're talking. Y'all are still a little too far away to pick up anything of what they're saying. But it seems like they're talking to each other. And it's definitely, y'all get the feeling that it's three against one. For sure. Like, it's the three of them talking to Milo in a very, not aggressive way, but in a very much just like, accusatory way, almost.
So they've got like a tense body language. Like they're not overly aggressive, but kind of an aggressive posture if they're speaking at him that way.
Tense. Tense is the right word. Like, it feels very tense. There's a lot of tension between these four people. As they're talking, like, the camera keeps moving down in, and as it does, it's a very neat little movie trick, because what happens is the person that y'all had been writing with moves ahead of the camera, and y'all get the impression of giant outstretched wings, and Uriel lands next to Milo. And y'all keep going down until y'all are close enough. Well, normally you'd be able to hear this conversation, but that's not really happening right now. Instead, what you get is subtitles, because I'm not going to do five voices myself.
Fair.
No?
Well, especially because so many of them are very close to each other. I'm not going to do that tonight.
You're welcome, audio listeners.
Yeah. So you get subtitles, and it goes something like this. I'm not going to even tell you all the subtitles. I'm going to give you the kind of the general impression of what's going on. The three ladies are more or less accusing Uriel and Milo of holding out on them for some very, very critical information and things like that. As they're going, like, Milo is trying to calm them down and to reassure them that there's a goal and a plan. Very Milo. Like, he's kind of channeling that inner Oracle a little bit. And Uriel is just being Uriel about the whole thing, which means he's basically, he's just kind of saying, like, shut up, mortals, more or less. Like, leave heaven stuff to heaven, people. Y'all go back to your own little protected lives in these mortal bodies you've chosen. As they're talking, something weird is happening. Because y'all have actually, y'all had panned down, and y'all, as the subtitles been flashing, y'all had been done, like, close-ups on each person's face. But now the camera's pulling back up a little bit. And there's something weird happening around them. Another Milo stepped out from behind a tree. And then a third stepped out from one side of the lighthouse. And a fourth from the other side. And a fifth from behind a parked car. Until eventually there's a small ring of seven other Milos surrounding these five people that are talking. And as it becomes apparent through the subtitles that the conversation isn't going anywhere, Uriel just, like, throws his hands up and is about to leave. And for whatever reason, the three ladies and seemingly Milo and Uriel have not noticed these other Milos. Until finally, Shandy just points at Uriel straight up, and the subtitle says very clearly, "You're playing a different game than the one you told us we were involved in." And all four of y'all hear Hades at this point, just like, rustle in his chair and lean over. Y'all can't really see them, but there's someone sitting in the sixth chair now. And Hades leans over and just goes, "Your mom's about to be a badass," and sits back down. And y'all just hear, like, a little quiet laugh from the sixth chair. Shandy is still just pointing at Uriel, and Uriel's just shoulders drop a little bit and his head hangs down, and he reaches up and he rubs his temples a little bit. And when he looks up again, the camera drops back down and does a close-up on him as his head comes up. His eyes are a sickly yellow color, and he just looks up and he smiles this just nasty, sick grin. And he just goes, "Well," and the voice kicks in at this point. "Well, I guess the game's up then, ladies. Let me ask you a question. Were any of you around when Lucifer fell?" And he stretches out his angel wings, and these veins of yellow crawl out along the wings. The feathers all fall off and start to burn as they're dropping to the ground. And in their place, there's these streams of yellow energy just like leaking out of the bones of the wings. The ground around him just cracks. All the grass on this entire hill just dies immediately. There's a massive, it looks like a massive thunderstorm just cracks into being overhead. Lightning starts showering down. A big bolt of lightning flashes down and destroys the entire lighthouse. The three ladies are kind of like buffeted back, and some of the other Milos that had been like closing in on them step in and grab the ladies by the arms and just hold them in place. And the Milo that they had been seeing and talking to pulls off his sunglasses, and you see the same kind of yellow color in his eyes. And he just looks at them and says, "We could have done this so much easier." And the movie cuts off.
What happens next?
Why don't we talk about what happened so far first?
I feel like eventually he's going to get to the point where we get to choose what happens, what's next.
When the lights come back up, Mallory is making two very purposeful motions with her fan. One is she is running it through. She has it in her right hand and she's running it through like her closed left hand. And then she's opening it, holding the two ends, which means both, "I hate you," and "I pray you, please forgive me." And she's just repeating it over and over as tears continue to fall.
Owen lets go of Mallory's hand and just stands up and then just starts pacing behind the chairs. And yeah, he's not looking great.
At some point, Owen, you notice that Cerberus in the original Greek is following you and just like his tail's wagging. He's all three of his tongues are just hanging out of his mouth, just like grinning. And he's just like following you as you pace. Hades
if he notices like, oh God, this is going to say so much about Owen. If he notices a dog following him and he's all like amped up on anxiety, he will just sit down and start petting the dog, even though it's a giant three-headed monster.
Oh, you're going to give it belly rubs.
Oh, the whole theater kind of shakes for a minute as Spot Cerberus just like rolls onto his back somehow and just like lolls into your lap to present his tummy for scritches. And he's just like making happy puppy noises as you do it.
Yeah. And he's just staring forward, like not even registering really what he's doing.
So we gonna talk, kids? Cause I imagine that couldn't have been easy to see.
The fan just continues to move and Mallory's mouth does not open, but the tears continue to fall.
Just when you thought things were gonna be okay. And Cole pats on himself, looking around. I forgot my flask.
Hades just stands up and gestures to the woman sitting next to him, who kind of resembles Shandy, just kind of in the eyes a little bit. Definitely Mediterranean descent, and like clearly her own person. But you can kind of, in a weird metaphysical kind of spiritual way, y'all can all kind of see Shandy in her a little bit. Hades just gestures to his wife and says, "All right, listen, this is going to be stressful enough without y'all fearing. We are not intending to keep you here against your will or otherwise, unless you choose to surrender your place in the fight and take the reward I promised. Would you like food or beverage?"
Yeah. I think, man, it just doesn't get easier, does it?
No. Life often doesn't.
We're dead.
Not quite.
Okay, you're probably going to need to come clean on what that is, too. Very quasi. Not defining term.
Hades just leans back against a railing that had not been there previously and just goes, "This hasn't happened before. Mortals are one of two things. You're either alive and probably annoying, or dead and then still annoying, because if you're not going to heaven or hell, you're my problem.
What about the in-between, though? Ghosts and weird edge cases where we pass over just for a bit.
Let's call that a demilitarized zone between the powers. Because here's the fun thing, kids. I'm not just Hades. Like, collectively, there's a whole host of non-heaven or hell-related afterlives happening, overlapping kind of... Look, your culture jives on Greek mythology currently. If y'all jived on Egyptian mythology, I'd probably look like Anubis to you.
I hate you. Please, I pray you forgive me. I hate you. Please, I pray you forgive me. She's still not spoken a word.
Y'all aren't dead because y'all are important. You're going to see it here in a minute. And part of what we need to talk about is a little bit of history. But first up, let's say this much. The three ladies on the screen a minute ago are very powerful people who... along with some of the rest of people of our caliber, willingly made a sacrifice to deal with an invasion. We lost our identity. We became myths. An entire species of people was removed from the world and just became fairy tales. Fairies, trolls, goblins, all record of any truth taken away. But we all still retain enough power to ensure that the important ones who can make the choices are preserved. And this is just one of a couple of sittings where we're having a conversation with some of you very important people who can make the decisions. Because you're mortal.
Was Milo always like that?
Ha! Let's talk about Milo for a minute. How old do you think Milo is?
I mean, now that you've said that, my guess goes way up. Let's go with random shot in the dark. 130.
Oh my, no. No. Physically, Milo has always looked to be kind of in his 30s. Probably late 30s, but still just 30s. And Hades just kind of laughs at your joke and says, no, not. He's not that much of an immortal, though. He probably could have been. Things had gone differently. He was about 21 or so when the 1970s. He was just kind of introduced to the supernatural world and stumbled into Port Avalon on a tip that there was something weird going on in the old Natural History Museum. If any of y'all are familiar with Port Avalon history, you know that there used to be a Natural History Museum that blew up in the 70s. People called it a gas explosion. Hades like snaps his fingers and a video appears on the screen behind him again. This time showing a familiar part of Port Avalon downtown. You see an old building that is definitely not there anymore. You see a quick pop and four people appear just kind of on the side of the shot. Y'all can see a less haggard looking Uriel, a much more haggard looking 21-year-old Milo, a younger zoot suit dressed Brian, and a less drunk Mephistopheles standing there. And Uriel just turns and takes a step, and the camera kind of tracks his motion, even though it's too fast for the human eye. He was standing next to Milo. Next thing you know, he's in the sky above the museum, and he just like reaches up, points to the sky, and then points to the museum, and a massive column of light lances down, and the whole museum is just gone. That is the day it all fell apart, Hades says. Milo had gotten a hold of something. It was a crystal. It tapped into something innate about who and what he was. It gave him powers and abilities. Uriel wanted to help him, saw the potential in him, saw a way to perhaps use his abilities to channel, kind of dig a back door to the heavenly lines of communication that they had been denied. He gave Milo a choice. Continue on as you are. Use these dark powers the crystal's giving you. Listen to the whispers that it's putting in your head. Probably eventually become a monster that other hunters deal with down the line. Or surrender the crystal. I'll destroy it, and you work for me. And you'll see this moment. It kind of cuts back to inside the museum. Milo's eyes are scarred up and like look sunburned. They're just white eyes. Something had happened that had robbed him of his sight earlier in the evening. Uriel's just holding out a very kind hand to Milo. And Milo starts crying. And he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a crystal. And he places it in Uriel's hands. Uriel squeezes his fist. And just like a fine powder runs out of it. And he goes and puts his hand on Milo, and they blink outside. And then the film rewinds a little bit. And as Uriel is opening the hand that had crushed the crystal, the camera rotates around and zooms in on the hand. And y'all all see one almost microscopic cut in his palm. And the camera zooms in, and you see one fragment of this yellow crystal burrow into the Archangel's skin. And then there's a time lapse, and you're inside Uriel's hand, and you see this crystal just start to spread out. These, like, living tendrils start to grow through him. And the video cuts off again, and Hades just goes, that's what happened. An act of kindness to Milo destroyed Uriel. It took years. It took years and years, almost 50 years to do it. But it did. And here's the thing. Later that night, Milo was given an oracular power. It took Uriel and some of the higher ranked angels he had on Earth still to do it. But Milo became an oracle. And he saw everything. Everything that was going to happen. He saw it all. And it broke him. And he ran. Last we heard, he, the real Milo, was in Brazil, in the Amazon, working with some more sheltered tribes, helping them fight against some vampires down there, doing real good work, and just generally trying to stay under the radar of a group that he knew was compromised. And Hayes just kind of leans back and just lets y'all take that in.
At the ending of his statement, the shadows around Cole begin to darken and deepen and kind of shade him. And he'll look at Hades and go, I'll take the finest liquors that deities have to offer.
Hades just grins at you and she's going, well, I still don't think you can handle ambrosia, but, and he just like snaps and like throws his hand out. And there's a silver metal cup sitting in the armrest of your chair that's got something potent in it.
I'll sniff, I'll take a sip, and,
actually, it's good.
I'm absolutely certain it is.
Can I say that before you get it to your lips, Mallory's hand, like, snakes out and grabs your wrist? And you notice for the first time that she's crying and she looks at you. She doesn't say a word. And she just lets go of your wrist. And her hands fall still on her lap.
Oh, Mom. I think he's on the up and up. I don't think you like what he's got to say. but the narrative makes sense. Everybody, I mean, it doesn't matter if we speak out loud, I don't think. You've seen the same things I have. Are we being deceived? I don't know. I can tell you that the voice that's been in my head since before I ever met any of you is gone.
I trusted Milo.
And that hurts.
I was very vocal in my support of him and of what we were doing and the rightness of it. So all I will say to you, Cole, is at this moment.
And she looks at Hades, and her eyes aren't necessarily cold. They're dark, but they're not they're not empty. There's lots of things there. I do not trust what is happening around us. I do not trust, frankly, I do not trust myself at this moment.
But if there's one thing that was instilled in me since childhood, never take gifts from gods. It doesn't end well.
Hades just kind of lowers his head, shakes it a minute, just goes, I'm not particularly in a mood to be antagonistic tonight, ma'am.
Really, you've done a fine job of it.
Really? I could be much worse. And from down the line of chairs, you hear Persephone just go, yeah, don't ever get in a real argument with him. He's a pain in the ass when he wants to be.
I do not wish to court an argument, nor do I wish to court death. But I am already dead by your own admission.
No. Not really dead. We're getting there.
I think Friday speaks up for the first time in a minute. She's definitely got, like, tears streaming down her face. Like, she's a sympathetic crier, so, like, the movie made her cry, and then, like, everything that's happening around her is making her cry a little bit. But she's like...
Oh, Cole's gonna put his arm around her.
She, like, kind of, like, barely acknowledges that she's got kind of... She's set in what she's about to say. But, she's like, well, this isn't the end, obviously, or else we'd be actually dead. Like, you said that there's a battle or something? Like, we're gonna fix this, right?
Yes. A moment is coming up. A moment that's gonna take a lot. And the four of you, along with some of your fellows who are having similar chats with some other people right now, y'all are going to make a choice. Tell you what. Why don't we... I was hoping we wouldn't have to do this. Why don't we go topside for a minute? And he just kind of snaps. The theater vanishes around y'all. Y'all are still in your chairs, if you want to be. Oh, and you're still sitting on a transported bit of the floor with Cerberus still in front of you.
And with Mallory's attention focused on him talking, because he feels like it's coming, Cole's definitely grabbing that glass and just kind of like tilting his head back and letting it go.
You go to do that, and as you go back, like, your mouth encounters something plastic on it now, and you look down, and there's a sippy cup lid on top of it, and Hades is just like side-eyeing you a little bit.
And I flip off Hades.
Fair. He just grins. Y'all are no longer in the movie theater. In fact, now y'all are sitting in your chairs or on a magic patch of floor near that hill you had just seen back in Port Avalon. Instantly, all four of you know that you're back on Earth. Like, you don't quite feel like you're 100% physical again, but you're back on Earth. You just know that. It's like when you walk into your house after being gone for a while, and just that feeling of like, oh, I'm back. Okay. It's kind of that feeling, just on a bigger metaphysical level. But this is not the happy, chill Port Avalon y'all know. This is a blasted waste. In place of the lighthouse, there's now this twisting tower made of this like black volcanic rock shot through with this pulsing yellow veins of energy. The bay is drained, and like looking out at the ocean, y'all see the ocean levels have dropped. Just on the horizon, you see what looks like this massive bone cage surrounding something that's flailing against it still. And Mallory, you remember having that vision of something moving through the ocean to Port Avalon, and you kind of immediately recognize that that's probably what it was. Whatever did this did not like it one bit. Y'all can see there's just like the city of Port Avalon is just overrun with these weird misshapen things moving around. Y'all hear some screams. Y'all see some fires in the distance. And on the hill in front of you, there is a like coffin shaped box of glass, almost is what it looks like, that has some of this yellow energy kind of around the base of it. Your view shifts, like all the chairs in the patch of floor all kind of shift and rotate around a little bit, and y'all are able to see into it. It's someone who looks vaguely familiar. Like, if the body in this glass case had a shave and a spa day and a trip to a tailor and like 50 years of hard living taken away from him, this would be the Milo y'all know. But this ain't him. This guy has a long, scraggly beard. He's got like an army surplus coat on. He's got ragged khakis. He's got boots on that like are almost worn through on the soles. And you can see every single hard year just like etched into his face and all of his lines and wrinkles in his, you know, abused skin. Standing a little ways away from this like magic coffin thing are three statues of Sunny, November, and Shandy. And all three of them have their hand, have one hand outstretched towards that coffin. And Hades just looks around and goes, "This is your world currently."
Mallory slips off the chair, her mouth opened in a scream that just won't come out, and she finds herself on her knees in wide-eyed terror.
Is she still praying?
Yes, she never stopped.
The warmth is back.
She weeps. It's a different type of crying. This is almost racking that's interrupting the words of the Lord's Prayer, but she continues.
Hades steps, kind of, is just kind of walking around the scene, just goes, "We can fix this. There, let's call it the infection that had taken over Uriel. It did get to some other angels, but it also knew that playing its hand too hard, too fast, could result in enough of the angels and demons trapped on Earth working together could remove it. It would have cost them Uriel and whatever other angels were infected, but they could have taken it. The forces of heaven and hell on Earth would have been weakened, but they could have cut off that avenue of invasion. So there weren't many taken. Like, three that we know of. Uriel and two trusted lieutenants of his. It didn't even reach the lower choirs, really."
Ben.
Friday kind of sighs in relief.
As soon as Mallory says "Ben" under her breath, Friday, the stone vibrates.
Oh, she like jumps out of her skin and like immediately is like in her head or whatever it is. Like, she's like, "Hey, wait, Ben, is that you? Like, what's happening? Is everything okay?"
"Friday. Oh my. Oh, by all the Lord's delight. Okay. When are you?"
I mean, the world is, there's statues and it's all to shit. It's all awful."
Hold on. Okay. Give me 2 seconds. And the line goes dead.
God. God damn it.
When Mallory starts to feel that warmth coming back to her, she stands up and her voice becomes stronger. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And just, there's a strength to her voice and to her posture that was not there a moment ago. On earth as it is in heaven, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
There is a blinding flash of light, and standing kind of on the other side of the glass coffin from the three statues is Ben. He's not dressed in a suit anymore. He's dressed in basically like a military outfit. He has a flaming sword in his hand. His wings are outspread, and he just goes, "Oh, thank the Lord I found you, Lord Hades." And he just nods at Ben, and Ben just goes, "Okay. How far did you get in the explanation?"
Owen like stands up at this point and like looks at Ben. "Don't I know you from somewhere?"
"Yeah."
Mallory's reverie breaks, and she executes an absolutely perfect curtsy. "Your Holiness."
Ben smiles at Mallory and just says, "Hey, you know the rule. Only God is holy."
"The Catholics say the Pope is, so I believe it is proper for me to say an angel is."
"Aren't you Anglican?"
"Don't forget it."
"Okay. Anyway, Hades is just kind of like bowed out at this point. The chairs are gone. Cerberus is gone. It's just the four of you and Ben standing on this hillside now. And Ben just goes, "Okay, do y'all remember a whole bunch of stuff about people messing with time?"
Friday immediately is like, nods like, "Yes."
Mallory goes a shade pink and nods.
"So, it's kind of against the rules, but I've been doing it a lot anyways. We're about to mess with time. In a big way. And I do mean a big way. We have a chance to change all this. To change everything. And all I can do right now in this moment is empower a wish made by those three." And he nods at the statues of the three ladies. "And channel it. Channel their wish through him." And he nods at the other Milo under the glass coffin. "That wish is for y'all to have a chance. One chance. Y'all can change things. But this is a big deal. Because no one's going to be there to moderate what you do. So here's what I need from you. I need you to swear on whatever you hold dearest and holiest that you will not use this power to become any more than you were."
Owen is going to stride up to Ben and look him dead in the eyes and say, "And who are we fixing this for?"
Ben reaches out his hand, palm up to you, and says, "Would you like to see?"
"I've done a lot of shit for people who wanted to manipulate me under the pretense that everything was good. You show me an entirely fucked up world and a place where I actually get some fucking rest. Show me who I'm doing this for before I swear anything."
"Take my hand, Owen."
Takes it.
The rest of y'all don't see anything. The rest of y'all just see Owen put his hand in Ben's. Owen, you see London. It's a weird kind of jittery view. Almost almost exactly like kind of like a scrying pool effect, where like the view is kind of jittering and like jumping forward through zoom levels. So you see London kind of from the air a bit, and it's on fire, and there's a rather large thing wrapped around Parliament and Big Ben. The London Eye is in the Thames, and the Thames is drained, and the view just kind of cuts in, and it cuts into a neighborhood that you recognize, and you're kind of immediately just like, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts in, and you see some just nightmare things as you're going in, and it cuts into a house that you know. The house seems undisturbed so far, and it cuts in, down a hall, up a flight of stairs, to a little girl's room. Outside the girl's door is a man in shining white armor, glowing white wings stretching out, filling the hallway. He has his own flaming sword just like touching, like blade tip down, and he is standing in front of this door. And he looks up as the vision kind of cuts to him, and he nods and just says, "Benjamin." And his eyes kind of like cut, and you get the feeling that he's looking at you now, Owen, and he just says, "Night." And the view cuts inside, and Imani is sitting on her bed, fast asleep, holding a teddy bear. Beautiful spring sunlight is streaming in through her window. And you cut back out to the blasted wasteland of Port Avalon, and Ben's just looking at you going, "She's important later, Owen. And we're doing all we can for her right now, but we're in a losing fight."
"You manipulative bastards."
He just looks at you and nods. "Yeah.
Clever. Manipulative bastards."
"Well, it helps that it's also true. Years, years, years from now, Owen, when you've gone on to whatever rest you want, that little girl that you saved is going to change everything for the better. So yeah, I've got one of my best, one of the only clean of that level guarding her, making sure she doesn't know. But we can't hold it forever."
He's not going to say anything. He'll just turn and sit next to Mallory, who I think is still on her knees, and just kind of hold her.
"Anyone else have a question before we try this? Before you swear?"
Friday looks jazzed as hell. She's so excited to like save the world and like do the time traveling thing that she's been teased with like since the beginning. She's like, "Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I'm so excited." Like she's trying not to be like disrespectful of people who have like who issues. have issues, but like she's jazzed.
Ben does look at her and just give her like this big grin, and when he does, like some of the warrior kind of falls off his face for a minute, and you see just like a young kid just like grinning at you.
Ah, oh, she loves Ben so much.
He's a good boy.
All right. Who else? Mallory, Cole, y'all have questions?
Mallory doesn't look at Ben. Her eyes are for Owen, and she clasps his hands and leans into him, and in a whisper, "Please don't leave me. I can't do this alone."
He walks over to you. Unlike Owen, who he let walk to him, he walks over to you, sticks his sword point down in the ground and leaves it there, gets down on both knees in front of you, puts a finger under your chin and lifts your chin up a little bit and just looks at you and goes, "We're just as cut off from the direct voice of the Almighty as you are. But do you feel that warmth in your heart?"
"Yes."
"So do I. The gates may be closed, but his eyes see all."
"But that will not be what I swear by."
"Good."
And her eyes turn back to Owen. "I'm with you, beloved."
"Thank you so much for giving me life and something to hold on to that wasn't pain. I will swear by you if you will swear by me."
"I swear by my love for this man."
"I swear by my love for this woman."
Are y'all holding hands?
Yep.
Yes.
B- Ben reaches out and places a hand over your grasped hands. Describe the ring that just appeared on your finger, you two.
Yeah, buddy.
Holy shit, you just had a ceremony officiated by an angel.
Oh my god.
Alan, we talked... Oh, fuck, what was it?
We did talk about our rings.
We talked about birthstones, yeah. Shit. Fuck.
Hey, listener, I didn't even know about that. So this is just great.
For Mallory, there's no really engagement ring, obviously, but her wedding band is made of willow. And it is inlaid with sapphire, which is Owen's birthstone.
Owen's is a white ivory. The band itself is white ivory, like the hilt of his sword. And set into it is an opal, Mallory's birthstone.
Mallory looks at the rings in a little bit of surprise and then looks at Owen. I believe this is the part where we kiss.
I'm supposed to say a really cool line, and then he just goes for the kiss.
And it's passionate, and it's everything to Mallory. It is this one thing in the world that she knows is true and right and just and good.
It is everything Owen wants to fight for.
Ben just kind of like hops back up and is blushing furiously because he was not expecting maybe all that to happen. Kind of like maybe a higher power intervened there a little bit. And he just like grabs his sword and just goes, okay, so Friday Cole, please don't be that dramatic. And also please tell me y'all are with me. And it's kind of the kid again. You can hear it in his voice.
So Cole is going to reach one more time just to test the waters here and reach and see if he can feel that passenger.
You feel something, almost maybe like an echo of it, or a footprint. Like, you know this is where it fit into you for so long, mm-hmm. because it was with you for so long. Like, this is its space. And Ben just kind of looks at you and just goes, Cole, his voice is kind of shifting back to that less warrior voice a little bit again. He just goes, you do know he will probably be back, right? Like if you do this, that's kind of the sacrifice. Like, you'll still be able to beat him. Like, you know you can beat him, and you're not going to lose that. That knowledge is still going to be with you, but he'll be back. Probably.
And Cole's sitting and thinking for a minute. I made a promise. I guess I gotta stick that through. I'm in.
You gotta swear it, Cole. What are you swearing by?
I swear by the power of family. And I will look over at Owen and Mallory. Didn't know what it meant for a long time, but now I do, and it means something.
Cole, when you make that oath, and when you look at Owen and Mallory, you feel something shift. It's like a big ripple just kind of reverberated out from the three of you, and something in your mind just kind of like, it's almost like you can see like your name and your identity, and the Cameron part of your name just kind of gets slowly, like, letter by letter deleted. And Montbank gets typed in its place. And when you look at Owen and Mallory, you see parents now. And you suddenly get this, like, new memory of Cole Cameron's parents dying. We'll figure out how later, if it becomes important. They died. Cole became an orphan. The system, through some manipulation by some people, put him with Owen and Mallory as some guardians because they both somehow had spectacular recommendations from unassailable sources. And in a very literal sense, you are now their adopted child.
Mallory rises, smooths her skirts, and looks at Cole. holds out her arms and says, "Come, my son."
He'll walk over and embrace her. And, like, he's got a little bit of that cry where it's not a cry. You just see your the body kind of shuddering. And he'll pull up for a minute. "You should have let me out of Hades whiskey." And then he'll hug her tighter again.
Owen will see this display, mouth the words to Friday, "I'm sorry you're so left out," and then just kind of hug the two of them.
No, Friday's like crying. She always cries at weddings. And she's crying and she like kind of...
It was a weird wedding and an adoption, like impromptu. This was like the weirdest...
Yeah,
it's thrown together lot. Ceremony.
No, she's definitely crying. She like chokes back a sob at the "come to me, my son" line, and she's like, "No, ignore me. It's fine. I'm fine. You guys do your thing.
You're welcome here too. If we're to save the world, I would call you family."
She's definitely like trying to wipe tears away from her face, just like, "I'm stop crying."
Don't worry, I'm crying too. And she pulls a handkerchief from her sleeve and hands it to her, and then pulls out a second one for herself.
Let's just save the world, guys.
Let's save the world.
And I will lean out and I will grab Friday by the hand and I will like bring her into the hug. Because group hugs are like the best. And like, we're half dead and we just pledged to save the world. I feel like that's a huggable moment. If ever there was one, like, "Oh shit, what did we just do? Let's hug this out."
And Mallory is like kissing Cole and kissing Owen and places a very, very chaste and demure kiss on each of Friday's cheeks.
Ben is watching all this and he just looks at Friday for a moment. And just kind of does like a two finger, just like, "Come here," real fast.
Way to ruin the moment, Ben.
"I'm sorry."
Friday like wipes the rest of her tears away and kind of composes herself as she like goes over to talk to Ben.
Yeah, Owen just kind of wipes at his eyes and just like yells over at Ben and Friday, "Your secrets are tearing this family apart."
Ben is just blushing furiously and is just like unsure of everything that he's kind of seen, because like angels don't really have family like this. It's just kind of weird, and he feels like he's intruding on a very, very good moment, and he just knows he has a job to do and he feels bad about it. He just goes, "Okay, Friday, your turn. I know you're all gung-ho, but you gotta swear too."
"Yeah, of course. I absolutely pledge to save the world on... Oh, man, how do I put this into words? Can I pledge on, like, the goodness of the world? Like, I don't know if that's too esoteric."
Ben's smile gets radiant for a moment. The ground underneath the two of you isn't... For just like a second, it isn't blasted glass. It's green again and living just right under y'all's feet. And for a second, like, you think you hear a bird and you feel sunlight on your face for a moment. And Ben just goes, "No, that's the Friday that I know from later. Yeah, that's a good thing to swear on."
"Right. Check me off. I did it."
"You did. Okay. The others have done their thing too. I think it's time. I think it's time for the moment. So I need you four to stand over," and he just points to one side of the glass coffin thing and one side of the statues. And as y'all kind of arrange yourself over there, kind of forming half a circle, really. Like, it's the three statues, the four of you, and Ben. And y'all are kind of formed like half a circle. And you see some shapes kind of emerge on the other side of this, the glass coffin. For a minute, y'all think y'all recognize some of them, but you're not sure. One kind of looks like Lori, one kind of looks like Helam, one kind of looks like Aisha. You just kind of feel a unity pulsing through the circle. Almost like y'all are, well, in fact, literally like y'all are forming a connection of power between all of y'all present. And Ben takes his sword and he places it in the ground, like tipped down in the ground in front of him. His eyes go bright blue, just solid blue. The three statues become Sunny, November, and Shandy again. And stepping in line with them, you see Hades and the woman who had been in the theater with y'all, Persephone. And behind y'all, and behind him, it's like hands on shoulders, y'all see a whole line of people. You see one carrying a trident. You see one with like a thundercloud storming around his head. You see one carrying a hammer. You see all of these myths and legends gathering behind them, just flickering in and out of existence for a moment. And this surge of power flows through them into the palms of the three ladies, into the coffin. And you see the body in the coffin take a deep gasping breath. Ben looks up, and y'all all kind of understand that he's not looking to the sky. He is literally looking up to the gates of heaven. And he just says, "Father, now would be a great time for some juice." And he pushes out his hand, and a beam of white light surges from his hand into the coffin. And the four of you find yourself on the hill on Halloween night at 9:30 p.m. Somehow y'all just know that. Don't worry about it.
Keen mind feet.
You just know it. Standing in front of you, looking shocked by your appearance, is the besuited Milo. And y'all all kind of hear Ben's voice. And he says very clearly to each one of you, "Believe me, I wish there was another way. This fake, this copy, this corruption can't be saved. And this is the moment where you choose, where that oath comes into play. You're going to change reality, but you gotta get rid of him."
"I have waited for this moment for several months. I think I finally get to say this to your face. Fuck you, Milo.
I pray you." And Mallory loosens the shawl off of her shoulders and snaps her fan open. "Please forgive me."
And a moment later, our view, the audience view, because I don't really think we need to see this, pans up. And four shadowy figures are standing over the body of a man in priest vestments. It's Halloween night. A mad scientist has just created chaos down in the city, turning a bunch of kids into whatever their costumes were. All of you, not just the four that we see, but all of you hunters, have changed things. And a wave of light ripples out from the hill. And Port Avalon is remade. And for the rest of 2019, that's where we're going to leave it. We'll see y'all at the end of the hiatus, and we'll be sure to have an intro episode of just what all has changed. So, see y'all soon, listeners. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Bye. Yes, thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
Oh, God.
The Lost Library is a production of the Fifth Draw family of podcasts and can be found at fifthdraw.com. You can email us at lostlibrary@fifthdraw.com or follow us on Twitter @LostLibraryCast.